The Good Shepherd and His Sheep. Very truly I tell you, Pharisees, anyone who does not enter the sheep pen by the gate, but climbs in by some other way, is a thief and a robber. The one who enters by the gate is the shepherd of the sheep. The gatekeeper opens the gate for him, and the sheep listen to his voice. He calls his own sheep by name and leads them out. When he has brought out all his own, he goes on ahead of them, and his sheep follow him because they know his voice. But they will never follow a stranger. In fact, they will run away from him because they do not recognize a stranger's voice. Jesus used this figure of speech, but the Pharisees did not understand what he was telling them. Therefore, Jesus said again, "Very truly I tell you, I am the gate for the sheep. All who have come before me are thieves and robbers, but the sheep have not listened to them. I am the gate. Whoever enters through me will be saved. They will come in and go out and find pasture. The thief comes only to steal and kill and destroy. I have come that they may have life and have it to the full. I am the good shepherd. The good shepherd lays down his life for the sheep. The hired hand is not the shepherd and does not own the sheep. So when he sees the wolf coming, he abandons the sheep and runs away. Then the wolf attacks the flock and scatters it. The man runs away because he is a hired hand and cares nothing for the sheep. I am the good shepherd. I know my sheep and my sheep know me, just as the Father knows me and I know the Father, and I lay down my life for the sheep. I have other sheep that are not of this sheep pen. I must bring them also. They too will listen to my voice, and there shall be one flock and one shepherd. The reason my Father loves me is that I lay down my life only to take it up again. No one takes it from me, but I lay it down of my own accord. I have authority to lay it down and authority to take it up again. This command I received from my Father." The Jews who heard these words were again divided. Many of them said, "He is demon-possessed and raving mad. Why listen to him?" But others said, "These are not the sayings of a man possessed by a demon. Can a demon open the eyes of the blind?" Then came the festival of dedication at Jerusalem. It was winter, and Jesus was in the temple courts, walking in Solomon's colonnade. The Jews who were there gathered around him, saying, "How long will you keep us in suspense? If you are the Messiah, tell us plainly." Jesus answered, "I did tell you, but you do not believe. The works I do in my Father's name testify about me, but you do not believe because you are not my sheep. My sheep listen to my voice. I know them and they follow me. I give them eternal life and they shall never perish. No one will snatch them out of my hand. My Father who has given them to me is greater than all. No one can snatch them out of my Father's hand. I and the Father are one." Again, his Jewish opponents picked up stones to stone him.
So good morning, everyone. Thanks to Rachel for reading. It's really interesting to be doing a talk like this. I've been doing lessons like this for sort of probably two terms out of the last year. So now I can tick sermon off my bucket list as well. We're going to start with a quiz. This is a quiz for the grown-ups, so there's no children here, which means that adults need you to answer. You can answer by typing in the chat, or if you want to, you can unmute your camera and shout really excitedly, but the chat's fine. So I'm going to play, three short video clips. And the question is, who is this man and what is he talking about? So I'm just going to move to the chat so that I can see what our responses are. Okay.
Getting to the end of a playoff final, it's gone to penalties. The first player goes up, scores the goal. You haven't won the cup yet, but what it does is it tells you that the goalkeeper can be beaten. It's brilliant news, absolutely brilliant. It's the second penalty now. That's also gone into the back of the net.
Okay, that was clip one.
Getting to the end of a playoff final, it's gone to penalties. Then we hope the train slows down safely to get into the station. That's the safety data. And when the doors open, I hope there's not an unholy scramble for the seats. The JCVI has very clearly said which people are going to need the seats most.
Okay, so that was the same person. He was talking about something slightly different. So I wonder if you can figure out what he was talking about there. Okay, and then the last clip is the same person again.
Slows down safely. This whole concept is a bit like a hose pipe in your garden with a tap at one end, and when you turn that tap off, water still comes out the hose pipe for a few seconds before it dies down. And if everyone in a certain area turns on their sprinkler in the garden at the same time, the water pressure will go down for a while.
Okay, so there we go, three clips. And I can see in the chat we've picked up this is Jonathan Van Tam, who is the Deputy Chief Medical Officer, and he's talking about he's actually talking about football, and he's talking about hose pipes, and he's talking about trains. But what he's really talking about is things like the easing of lockdown and vaccines and sort of things like that. So there we go. And that is, he's become a little bit of a sort of mini COVID celebrity over the last few sort of weeks and months, because he likes to sort of talk in metaphors. He likes to use kind of different examples to say something. So I'm just going to close my chat because I can't see anyone's faces. Close. There we go. So my chat is now closed. I can see your faces. That's lovely. So why did I show those clips? Well, the reason that I showed those clips is because I want to suggest that what Jonathan Van Tam does in his press conferences is very similar to what Jesus is doing in John chapter 10. I didn't expect that I'd be opening a talk by comparing Jesus to Jonathan Van Tam, but that's what's happened today. Jonathan Van Tam explains the different aspects of COVID using metaphors of things like football, trains, hose pipes, things that are familiar to us in everyday life. Most of us don't really know much about vaccines, but we maybe do know about football. And throughout the book of John, Jesus does the same. He teaches people who he is by using metaphors. He doesn't use football or trains. He uses things that were familiar to his first century listeners. I am the vine. I'm the bread. Last week, he described himself as the light of the world. And in today's chapter, Jesus uses two different metaphors to describe himself. First, he says, I'm the gate. And then he says, I'm the shepherd. And I think the reason that Jesus used metaphors is the same reason that Jonathan Van Tam uses them today, that they are a way of communicating difficult ideas in a way that's easy to understand. And so in today's passage, we're going to see how Jesus is able to unpack some of the mysteries of the kingdom of God by using everyday metaphors from the ordinary life of the people that were around him and that were listening to him. Now, Jesus' words in chapter 10 follow directly on from chapter 9, which Phil spoke about last week. Those of us that were in the service will remember that last week in chapter 9, Jesus healed a man who had been born blind. He did it by spitting, making some mud and putting it on his eyes and getting him to wash in the pool of Siloam. And for that man himself, not only did he receive his physical sight, but his spiritual sight was transformed. And that man grew stronger and stronger in his faith in Jesus. But then those who were around who'd heard about this were divided, partly because Jesus had done this healing on the Sabbath, but maybe also because this man with the power to heal the blind was challenging their authority. And the Pharisees end up turning on this man who's been healed, and they insult him and they drive him away. And John 10 picks up on this situation. It's maybe not exactly the same day, but the audience is very likely the same group of people who have just recently witnessed this miracle of healing the blind man. And Jesus' words in John chapter 10 divide neatly into sort of three separate sections. And that first section, the first part, verses 1-6, appears to be very specifically directed towards those Pharisees who had mistreated this man who's just been healed. And Jesus says to them, "Very truly I tell you, anyone who doesn't enter the sheep pen by the gate, but climbs in by some other way, is a thief and a robber. The one who enters the gate is the shepherd of the sheep. The gatekeeper opens the gate for him, and the sheep listen to his voice. He calls his own sheep by name, and he leads them out. And when he's brought out all of his own, he goes on ahead of them, and his sheep follow him because they know his voice. But they will never follow a stranger. In fact, they will run away from him because they don't recognize a stranger's voice." And in these verses, Jesus is talking to the crowd about sheep. But obviously, he's also not really talking about sheep. And the difficulty that we have today in engaging with this passage is that our knowledge of Israelite sheep farming is probably about as good as the first century crowd's knowledge of trains or hose pipes. When I think of shepherds and sheep pen, I probably think of something set up in the corner of a farmer's field, and it's maybe used to keep all the sheep together so the farmer can shear them or count them, or I don't know what, I don't even know what farmers do. But that's not the kind of sheep pen that Jesus is describing. Sheep in the ancient world didn't live on a farm, they lived in the wilderness. And the shepherd spent his time with his sheep there in the wilderness, keeping them safe from predators and leading them to places where there was food and water. And scattered around the wilderness, there were large enclosures where the sheep could be kept safe for a period of time. And often the shepherds would lead their flock into an enclosure for the night. And some enclosures might be manned by a gatekeeper, others would be unmanned, and the shepherd would position himself across the entrance for the night. And the walls of the enclosures were probably about chest high, so high enough to keep the sheep in and the predators out, but easily sort of low enough for a person to climb over. So if we think about that context, if we think about that sort of picture of what the sheep pen is, in the context of the fact that Jesus has just healed this blind man, that the blind man has now begun to follow Jesus, and that the Pharisees are now turning on this blind man, it's quite clear to see what Jesus is saying to them through these words. He's saying, "Stop leading my people astray." He's saying to them, "You think you're like the shepherds, but you're not. You're more like the robbers who climb over the wall. But," he says, "the people who really know me, like the blind man who's recently been healed, they won't listen to you. They won't follow you." So how do the Pharisees and the other people in the crowd respond to this? Well, verse 6 tells us they just don't understand. It says Jesus used this figure of speech, but they didn't understand what he was telling them. And therefore, Jesus explained it again. And in the verses that follow, he breaks this kind of sheep and sheep pen metaphor down even further. And at this point, once we move on, he seems that he's not just talking to the Pharisees, but he's talking to the whole crowd, to all those people who were around him listening, but who'd also witnessed this healing of the blind man and also knew what had taken place after that. In verses 7-10, Jesus says, "I am the gate." He says the sheep pen has one way in and one way out, and it is through me. And of course, the question is, if there's one way in and one way out, and Jesus is the way, the question is, the way into what? I think in this day and age, we're quite skeptical. If I'm going to go through a door, I want to know what's in the other side. We don't even click a link on an email unless we're sure where that link's going to take us. And I think sometimes when we talk about our faith with non-believers, certainly for me, it seems to me that people seem worried that I'm trying to trick them into something. They're on their guard about being lured into a trap. But the sheep pen in Jesus' story is not a prison for keeping the sheep locked up. In verse 9, it tells us, "Whoever enters through me will be saved, and they will come in and they will go out and they will find pasture." For us as Christians, I think sometimes we can find ourselves seeing the Christian faith as a set of boundaries, with Jesus there climbing, sort of guarding the door to make sure that we don't escape. But that's not the picture that Jesus is painting here. Because he says, whoever enters through me will be saved. And the sheep pen is not there to keep the sheep locked in. It's there to keep danger out. The sheep pen is our protection. It's our safety. The sheep pen represents life, eternal life. In verse 10, Jesus warns us, beware of the thieves and robbers out there who haven't come to give you life. They've come to steal and destroy. But he says, I have come that they may have life and have it to the full. What Jesus is describing here is the kingdom of heaven. And Jesus is the only way in. The gate is not a trap. It's an invitation to a life of safety, of freedom, and fulfillment. In the next section of what he says, verses 11 to 18, Jesus continues his metaphor of the sheep pen, but this time he changes it slightly. He says, I'm not just like the gate, I'm also like the shepherd. And in a way, it's a little bit confusing for us that he's kind of changed his metaphor halfway through. But I think Jesus did this for a reason. Because by describing himself as a gate, Jesus is speaking about his uniqueness, that he's the only way to the kingdom of God. But by describing himself as a shepherd, Jesus reminds us that he's also a person. The Pharisees were trying to teach people that being religious was about following rules and laws. But being a Christian is primarily about following a person, about following Jesus. And as we look at our Bibles, at this section here from verses 11 to 18, there's three things that we see about, well, there's many things, but there's three that I've picked out that we can see about Jesus. And the first is that the shepherd knows his sheep. Verse 3 tells us he calls his sheep by name. Verse 14, I know my sheep and my sheep know me. It's hard for us to believe today, but shepherds really did recognize their sheep. Even if they had hundreds of sheep, they recognized them individually. Sometimes two or more shepherds would bring their sheep to the same sheep pen overnight. And the next morning, each shepherd would call his own sheep back to himself. Either by his with his voice or perhaps a whistle or a sound, and the sheep knew the shepherd and the shepherds knew the sheep. When we become a Christian, we're not entering into a club or a contract, we're entering into a relationship. Jesus draws a comparison between the hired hand who doesn't know the sheep individually and doesn't care much about them with the shepherd who knows his sheep by name. The second thing is that the shepherd cares for his sheep. The shepherd leads his sheep out, he goes out ahead of them, and they find pasture. Now, part of the job of a shepherd was to know where in the desert to find food and water. Without a shepherd, the sheep risk getting lost, they risk dying from starvation and thirst, and being hunted by predators. I think it can be all too easy for us today to forget that we actually need Jesus. We can forget all he's done for us and all he does for us day by day. Now, I am a mother and I've got two children. They're both in secondary school now. But I remember a time when my eldest child, Sam, was about three. And we were in High Chelmer Shopping Centre together and Sam wandered off from me. And I think pretty much every parent has had this experience where you look around and you can't see your child. Now, luckily, this experience wasn't particularly traumatic on this occasion, and I managed to spot Sam probably in less than a minute. But instead of going straight up to him, I tucked myself around a corner into the doorway of a shop so that I could see him, but he couldn't see me. And I waited until he realised that he was alone. And it didn't take long, perhaps a minute or so, and he started to look scared. But even then, cruel mother that I am, I didn't go straight up to him. I left him just a little bit longer before I came to him because I wanted him to know the fear and understand the danger of wandering off. I'm not sure if that makes me a really cruel parent or a good one, but it was pretty effective because after having that experience, Sam didn't really wander off from me sort of much really. I didn't have a problem with him after that. A year or two later, the same thing happened with my youngest, Chloe. She wandered off. So I did the same thing. I think it was the same shopping centre, in fact. I'm that good of a parent. And I tucked myself around a corner so that I was just out of Chloe's sight. And I kept an eye on her and I waited for her to notice that I wasn't there. 20 minutes. She was completely oblivious. She was sitting down, she was standing up, she was playing hopscotch with the little patterns on the floor in high chair. She was having a whale of a time. In the end, it was lunchtime. So I just gave up. I took her home and I resigned myself to the fact that my youngest child was going to give me trouble. Now, the reason that I tell that story is partly to embarrass my children, which is every mother's prerogative. But it's also as a reminder to us that just because we don't feel lost doesn't mean that we're not lost. Chloe would have been quite happy if I'd have left her alone all of that time, but she wouldn't have been safe. Let's remember not to be complacent about our own lostness. Remember that however confident or self-sufficient that we might sometimes feel, we need a shepherd. The third thing that really jumps out as if it's from this passage is that the shepherd lays down his life for his sheep. Jesus compares himself as the good shepherd with the hired hand. The hired hand is not the shepherd and he doesn't own the sheep. And when danger comes, the hired hand abandons the sheep and runs away. And in fact, in the ancient world, some hired hands, when they came across a wild animal, a predator, they would actually take up a small lamb and they would throw it in the direction of the predator to sort of enable themselves to get away and to save their own life. But the good shepherd fights to protect his sheep, even at the cost of his own life. Verse 11 tells us that the good shepherd lays down his life for the sheep. And he repeats it in verse 15, I lay down my life for the sheep. And in verse 17, again, the reason that my father loves me is that I lay down my life only to take it up again. And probably the thing that struck me most of all as I was preparing for this week and reading through John 10 is that it is unmistakable. There can be no doubt that Jesus knew he had come to die. And he knew he'd come to die for the sake of saving his flock. Jesus came to earth to call people to follow him, but he didn't just come to show us the right way to go and the best way to live. He came to die, to give his life for us, to save us from our wickedness and our weakness by dying in our place. And the Bible tells us that when the crowd hear these words, once again, they are divided. Many of the crowd say, he's demon-possessed and raving mad. Why listen to him? But others say, these are not the sayings of a demon-possessed man. Can a demon open the eyes of the blind? And in the last part of chapter 10, it picks up the sort of events at the festival of dedication. So some time again has passed, but this is probably the same group of people. And so Jesus is crossing paths again with this same group of Pharisees. And in verse 24, it says the Jews were gathered around Jesus saying, how long will you keep us in suspense? If you are the Messiah, tell us plainly. And in verse 25, Jesus says, I did tell you, but you did not believe. The works I do in my Father's name testify about me, but you do not believe because you are not my sheep. And I think that there in those verses, we have what is the real challenge of John 10. Because for us today, the real question is not who is the shepherd or who is the gate. The big question for us is who are the sheep? Because apart from identifying himself as the gate and the shepherd, Jesus mentions other groups. There are the thieves who try to steal the flock and lead them away. There's the hired hand who abandons the flock in times of trouble. And there are the sheep who recognize the voice of the good shepherd and follow where it leads. Verse 27, my sheep listen to my voice. I know them and they follow me. Despite everything that the Pharisees have heard Jesus say, despite the amazing things that they've seen him do, some people still don't get it. They don't recognize who Jesus is. And they say, Jesus, stop talking about sheep pens and shepherds and tell us plainly. And to go back to the Jonathan Van Tam example with his COVID metaphors, some people listen to him and say, this is brilliant. Now that you've talked about hose pipes, I fully understand the government strategy for easing lockdown. Other people say, can you just stop talking about trains and football and tell us when we can go back to the pub? Now, I'm not suggesting that your like or dislike of the deputy chief medical officer makes you more or less likely to be a follower of Jesus. But what the Bible does seem to be saying is that there are some people who are more open than others to hearing and understanding Jesus' voice. I'm going to ask you to consider for yourself, how many people do you think that you know well enough to recognize by the sound of their voice? Is it more than five? Is it more than 10? And for many of us, that number has probably increased over the last 12 months. I'm a secondary school teacher, so I've spent more than half of the last year doing my teaching online. And just in the last few weeks, I've noticed, and I've been quite proud of myself, that I can now recognise an awful lot of my students just by the sound of their voice, because they won't put their cameras on, so I have to. But that got me thinking, how well do I recognise God's voice? There's a story that I want to share about a man from New York. And he lived in New York and he invited his Native American friend to come and visit him in the city. One afternoon, they were walking through the city together in rush hour. The streets were full of people. There were cars honking their horns. There was shouting. There were sirens wailing. And amid all of that noise, the Native American friend turned to the New Yorker and he said, I think I can hear a cricket. And the New Yorker said, that's ridiculous. You couldn't possibly hear a cricket in all this noise. The Native American says, no, I'm sure of it. And he listens carefully. And then he takes a few steps to a shrub that is planted by the side of the road. And he lifts a leaf. And sure enough, under the leaf, there's a cricket. Now, the New Yorker is completely amazed. And he says, that is incredible. You have got superhuman ears. No, the friend says, my ears are no different than yours. And the New Yorker says, they must be. Who could possibly hear a sound so quiet in all that noise? And the Native American friend says, let me show you. And he reaches into his pocket and he pulls out some coins and he drops them on the floor. And immediately every head within 20 yards turns. They want to know if the money that's tinkled down on the pavement is theirs. You see what I mean, the Native American says. Everyone's hearing is the same. It just depends on what you're listening for. And in our world of noise and busyness and chaos, how hard are we listening out for God's voice? Sometimes I walk by myself in Highlands Park and I listen and I can hear the sounds of birds and insects and leaves rustling. And I can also hear in the background the sound of cars and trains. And without any effort, I can distinguish the sounds of nature from the man-made sounds. But can I distinguish God's voice from the things of this world that cry out for my attention? If I'm on a video call and I'm teaching and I'm struggling to hear properly, there are things that I can do to make it better. I can get rid of the background noise. I can turn up the volume or I can move closer to the sound. Can I apply those principles when I listen out for God? What's the background noise in my life that threatens to drown out God's voice? Do I draw near to the sound of God's voice, or do I keep my distance? What changes could I make to help me hear God better? And how do I respond when God does speak to me clearly? Do I follow the sound of his voice, or do I go in my own way? Jesus tells us that the good shepherd knows his sheep, and his sheep know him. They recognize his voice and they follow where it leads. And I'm going to finish now by sharing with you some words from Psalm 95. Come, let us bow down in worship. Let us kneel before the Lord our Maker. For he is our God and we are the people of his pasture, the flock under his care. So today, if you hear his voice, do not harden your hearts.